ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Welcome in. This is another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour, Sacktown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. There's Scott Marsh. Scott, are you with us today? How you doing?
I am here and ready to go. Looking forward to another great hour.
You know, we had an opportunity to play in the celebrity tournament up at Rancho Murrieta last week, and was able to do our show live from there. That was a lot of fun doing the show live, and we had a great time with the golf tournament as well.
Yeah, that was awesome to meet all the guests that John Jacobs brought out there, all the sports people, and just the entire tournament. It was really well done.
As a matter of fact, I've been trading some emails with Jim Barr. We're going to have him on the show in the next couple of weeks to talk about his years with the Giants and, of course, his golf game. On the show today, Mr. Gary Plato, PGA. He's a 50-plus year member of the PGA, a member of the NCPGA Hall of Fame. And we're going to talk about his career and the people he met and taught along the way and the foundation that he has put together. You know, Gary said if he could get every young person in the world playing golf, that the world would be a better place. And that's the goal of this Lucius Bateman Foundation that he's founded, to get as many young people playing golf as possible so that the world can be a better place. That's a pretty good goal.
That's a big goal. And I agree with him. I think it would be a better place. I can't wait to hear the conversation you have with him.
Tom Morton, PGA Director of Instruction from Hagen Oaks. It's always fun to have Tom on the show. We'll talk a little bit about the Open Championship and you know, not too far out of line with what I mentioned about Gary is the preponderance of junior golf right here in the Sacramento area and Northern California in particular.
Yeah, it's amazing. We see baseball and the draft and so many Sacramento kids coming out of here. Well, golf is becoming a hotbed in this community, just like baseball.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about all of that on the Golf to Go Radio Hour coming up right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sacktown Sports.
Welcome back in. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sacktown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa. And Scott Marsh is on assignment right now. So we are going to welcome in Mr. Gary Plato, PGA member for more than 50 years. And he's a member of the NCPGA Hall of Fame. Gary's held numerous positions over the years in his career. He's served on so many committees. He taught famous people. He's a role model to many and a good friend of mine. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank. Happy to be here.
You know, I've known you a number of years now, but I didn't really know you until I started looking at your background. You've had a phenomenal career, and we're going to get into it a little bit, and we're going to talk about you know, some of the things you're doing now that are really important in the world of charity and helping others. But, you know, you I guess your first round of golf was something in 1954. What actually got you into the game and what excited you about it?
Well, actually, I was playing on a little league baseball team at the time in the city of Alameda, and my aunt started playing golf at Alameda. Basically because she wanted to do something that other members of the family had not done. So she suggested I go over to the Alameda Golf Course and take some lessons. Earl Fry was giving free lessons on Saturday morning. So I did, and Earl teed up a 7-iron for me, and I just happened to hit it perfect. Not perfect, but I hit it farther than I could hit the baseball, and immediately I was hooked.
It's really hard to describe that feeling when you know, the first time when the golf club hits the golf ball perfectly and it goes into the air and there's a smile comes over your face, and that's a moment that lasts with you for the lifetime.
It sure did with me.
You were fortunate enough to after that initial lesson to take some lessons from a man named Lucius Bateman, and that particular moment and the lessons that you had from him is going to resonate a lot during this discussion that we have today. And actually, when we kind of get to the end, we're going to talk about how your initial meetings with Lucian or Lucius, resulted in you forming a foundation called the Lucius Bateman Foundation, basically to do what he was doing then, which was to kind of give a hand up to young juniors that maybe needed some help, maybe couldn't afford lessons, and he did so with a smile and an open hand.
He sure did, and if it wasn't for Lucius Bateman, I certainly would not have been able to learn the game of golf or do what I have done in golf, and I certainly owe him just about everything in that regard.
Talk a little bit about the man. He was an African American, and that was a time when he wasn't allowed to be a PGA member. You know, that was kind of a blight on the PGA at that point. But he persisted and taught there at the Alameda Golf Course and then at the Airway Driving Range, if I'm not mistaken. But talk about the man and you know what kind of effect he had on you as a young boy taking your initial steps into golf.
Well, I first met Lucius Bateman on the driving, or not on the driving range, on the putting green at Alameda Golf Course shortly after I started playing golf. And we had a conversation, and he watched me putt a little bit, and one thing led to the other. And the next thing I know, I was picking golf balls up at the Airway Fairway driving range opposite the Oakland Airport, right across from the old Oakland Airport, and it's currently where the Hilton Hotel is at the corner of Doolittle and Hagenberger. He was a man that he really didn't care who you were, what station in life you were. He just wanted to teach kids how to play golf and make their lives better. And the one thing about Lucius over the years that I knew him, he never let his color get in the way. He just went about his business doing what he did best, and that was teaching kids how to play golf and really teaching adults how to play golf. And he was not only a teacher of the game of golf, but he was a teacher of life. He taught us so much about being a better person and how we should act both on and off the golf course. And that was very, very special. And that was not just me, but he did this to hundreds of young boys and some girls on there. There weren't very many, but mostly young boys.
You know, when you think about those kinds of life lessons, that's certainly what the first tee is all about, and certainly most junior programs as well. But to have had that in his mind then, that you know that he was not just teaching you how to hit the golf ball, but how to be, you know, good citizens. That's really remarkable that was that many years ago.
Absolutely right. You know, there were a lot of people that went on to be very, very good players. Tony Lima is one of the players that went on the tour. There certainly were others, the Lotz brothers, Don Witt, and Ross Randall. Went on there as well, John McMullen. But most importantly, you know, he taught not just tour players, but he taught club professionals like myself, who went on many, many club professionals, many college All-Americans. And most importantly, he really taught hundreds of young people who went on to be great and productive citizens in the communities. And one that comes to mind that's up in the Sacramento area was Jim Sabenza, who was the assistant attorney general at the state of for the state of California for many, many years. Jim just retired. But those are just some of the examples that went through Lucius Bateman's stable.
Obviously, Dick and John Lotz, you're talking about, who are you know, very well regarded here in Northern California. But Champagne Tony Lima, to be one of his students, that was certainly a bright light. Tragically died in a plane crash just as his career was beginning to blossom. But he was maybe Lucius's most famous, I guess, in terms of tour players. But as you say, it went all the way from tour players to truck drivers. What an incredible legacy he left.
He sure did.
You know, Gary, after learning how to play the game from Lucius, certainly turned your career into one revolving around golf. But I was looking in your background a little bit. In 1969, you went to Florida to qualify for the PGA Tour, and you had some famous guys along with you there.
Well, we did it. We ended up, Johnny Miller had just graduated from BYU, and he drove down there in a Buick Riviera and met Bruce Summerhays and I there. We played a couple of weeks prior to the qualifying. And obviously, Bruce and I were unsuccessful in our attempt to qualify, and Johnny was successful by a single stroke. And of course, if you take a look at Johnny's career, he had a Hall of Fame career and a wonderful career. But it was just one of those experiences that we had. I look back at the picture of that. I can't believe that we were all that young.
You know, I love the longer I'm involved in golf, which is, you know, certainly a number of years now. But as I sort of said at the beginning of this interview, we're talking with Gary Plato, PGA Hall of Fame, NCPGA Hall of Fame member. But, you know, to find these little nuggets, you know, where this person relates to that person and, gee, I didn't know you knew him. And, you know, we all kind of live our lives in many instances separately. But when we find where these points of contact are, it's just fascinating to me. You know, I had no idea that you and Johnny Miller tried to qualify together. And so, you know, your career just kind of took off from there in terms of being a member of the Northern California PGA and a club professional. You've been so involved over the course of your 50 plus year career, and it continues today. You certainly haven't stopped, but you've held all the titles of president and secretary, and been on various committees, and you've worked to develop education and so on and so forth. And one of the things that was really fascinating to me, having won this award, I didn't realize you were the founder of the NCPGA's Golf Writer of the Year Award, which has now become the Media Person of the Year Award. That I was blown away when I saw that.
Well, it was interestingly enough, Frank, that I haven't really spoken to many people about that, but I was coming back from a national meeting, one of our national PGA conferences, and I was sitting in the airport, and I was thinking about what had just transpired, and somehow that popped into my mind, and I said, you know, the media, it was called the Golf Writers Award in those days, and I'm glad to see it's gone to the media, because it goes well beyond that, but the media has played such an important part in golf and in promoting the game and telling the story of golf that I just felt, you know, we gave awards to various categories, but that was one that we didn't give one to. And I was so happy when the board agreed to go along and do this award. And it was very satisfying.
And certainly a lot of well-recognized people have been recipients of that award over the years. You began your career as a assistant professional at San Jose Country Club, and about a year later you became the head golf professional. But you talk about finding a job and keeping it. You were there for years till you finally retired. What was it like at San Jose Country Club?
Well, San Jose Country Club, I might just digress a minute. I did work for Joe Zakarian at the Los Altos Country Club when I first got into the business, and then from there tried to qualify on the tour, and then went to San Jose Country Club. San Jose Country Club is one of the oldest clubs in Northern California. I went to work for a gentleman by the name of Eddie Duino Sr., who was really one of the great club professionals in Northern California, and kind of in the Tommy Lopresti era. He and Tommy were great pals, and of course, you know Tommy very well. But Eddie was just one of those guys you went to work for, and you started learning the minute you walked into his shop, and it continued even after he had retired. But I was very fortunate to be there. A lot of wonderful players came out of San Jose Country Club. It's a club that I still play today and just thoroughly enjoy.
You know, we talked earlier about some of the people that Lucius Bateman taught over the course of your career. You had a few famous people that you taught as well.
Well, I was fortunate enough, being at San Jose Country Club, to have come in. Of course, Roger Maltby was just a junior when I first arrived there at San Jose Country Club. And Eddie had done a good job with him laying the foundation down. And I kind of picked up where Eddie left off. And when he decided to go on the tour in 19, I believe it was 74 or 5, he had a wonderful career out there on the tour. And he was really one of the colorful people out there. Other people that was able to teach both on the women's tour and the other tour, Dana Laughlin, who is currently the women's golf coach at San Jose State University, played on the tour for many women's tour for many years. Debbie Hall, another wonderful young player, played out there for quite a few years. And then, of course, there were others that followed in behind there. John Ellis, interestingly enough, John, I had in my junior class at the age of 4, and I still call him JJ to this day, but he's the he's the caddy who caddied for the current U.S. Open champion, Wyndham Clark.
Wow.
They met up in on the golf team at the University of Oregon, struck a long-time relationship. John was won the Order of Merit on the Canadian Tour some years ago, and wasn't able to parlay that into a PGA Tour career, but he did hook up with Wyndham Clark, and they've had a wonderful relationship, and I'm just so happy to see them doing so well.
One of the other names that surprised me and many of us here in Northern California aware of is Sean Kelly, the head golf professional at the Ridge. Sean is an accomplished player as well.
Yeah, Sean is a wonderful, not only a wonderful player, but he's a wonderful gentleman. And that brings back another Tom Silva, who was a very close friend of Sean Kelly. The two of them both were excellent players. Tom ended up going on the PGA Tour for a couple of years, and he's currently down in Southern California teaching. But he and Sean both worked for me at San Jose Country Club at virtually the same time. Oh, wonderful man. People, both of them.
We're talking with Gary Plato, a PGA Hall of Fame, NCPGA Hall of Fame member. He's a PGA member for more than 50 years and a decorated career at the San Jose Country Club. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, as we suggested at the beginning of this, your career started with some teaching by a gentleman named Lucius Bateman. And when we're going to come back, we're going to talk about what Lucius Bateman meant to you and what you have done all these years later in memory of him and to help the youth of Northern California. You are listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa, back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
You are back with the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa, talking with Gary Plato, PGA member for more than 50 years, a member of the NCPGA Hall of Fame. And Gary, when we began this discussion, we talked about your I guess, second teacher, really, Mr. Lucius Bateman. Lucius Bateman was an African-American who taught at Alameda Golf Course, which is now called the Chuck Carica Golf Complex, I guess. And all these years later, first of all, you were responsible for nominating Lucius to be an honorary member of the Northern California PGA, which was successful, and he was a member of and is a member of the NCPGA Hall of Fame. But you have just recently put together a group of some pretty impressive folks here in Northern California in Lucius's name to form a foundation called the Lucius Bateman Foundation. Tell us what that's all about and how it affects people here in Northern California.
Well, Frank, actually, it just kind of evolved. It wasn't something that I had planned. Lucius, in 2008, began to be recognized, thankfully, In 2008, the California Golf Writers Association gave or actually awarded Lucius the Golden State Award, which was their highest honor. A year later, he was bestowed with honorary membership in the Northern California PGA. In 2010, he was inducted into the African American Ethnic Hall of Fame. In 2008, also, Northern California PGA inducted him into their Hall of Fame. And then this last year, 2022, he was inducted both into the Northern National African American Hall of Fame and also into the Northern California Golf Association Hall of Fame. And I preface this by saying that he was starting to get a lot of awards, and these awards were all over the place. Don Bockham had one of his awards in Sacramento. There were others that were down in Alameda, and they were kind of all over the place. And the attempt was to try to bring all of these awards together. And we met with Umesh Patel at the Alameda Chukarika Golf Complex to see if there would be a way we could possibly bring all of his memorabilia together into a museum at the Lucius Bateman Memorial Driving Range at the golf course. And Umesh was very supportive of our thoughts and efforts and whatnot, and that started to move forward. And I'm happy to say that all of the memorabilia has been cataloged, pictures have been restored, and that museum is going to be officially opened within the next month or two. After we got through that first little bit, there was some discussion between some of my friends that, you know, what if we put together a foundation or develop a foundation where we could maybe carry on the legacy of Lucius? And my very close personal friend, Rudy Stadler, stepped forward and he said, I think that's a great idea, and I will be a big part in making sure that that happens. And of course he was. So the discussions began in mid-2022, and I'm happy to report January of 2023, we were officially the Lucius Bateman Foundation, a 501c3 corporation, and we formed a board of directors, which I think is just absolutely first class. And we developed a website, LuciusBatemanFoundation.com. And we are now going to have a tournament honoring Lucius in September. And the proceeds of that particular tournament are going to go to encourage and develop our youth in Northern California in the name of Lucius Bateman. And I'm just so proud of our board of directors and our founders. And this is just coming together so nicely.
You know, it's one thing to have an idea. Gee, you know, it's kind of like the old adage, let's paint the barn and put on a show. To say I'm going to form a foundation and actually follow through with it and get a board of directors as you have and to have the meetings and to, you know, to get all the required paperwork that makes you legal, and here you are about to have a golf tournament to you know, to do some good. And in many cases, that's what golf is all about, as we kind of alluded to in the beginning. I think the number is $3 billion with a B that have gone to charity through the game of golf over the years. And it just continues. Gary, you know, when you think back at your first lesson with Mr. Bateman and you think about what he meant to you, what do you hope to accomplish with your foundation and your board in helping to instill those same kinds of values in today's youth?
Well, we are a foundation that doesn't really run a program, but we are a foundation that's going to raise money for individuals, not individuals, but for groups who are doing outstanding work, working with kids. And there are a number of those groups. I view the tournament that is going to be held in September as the beginning. I would like to and have plans on developing more funding mechanisms that will allow us to create a revenue stream that will hopefully over the years assist thousands of deserving young people who might not have the opportunity at this particular point, but we want to make sure that they do have the opportunity. And our whole purpose is to have those young people enjoy the game of golf as much as I have and others have had.
You know, you have talked so many times in conversations with me and with others about the value of the game itself and what it means to you and what it means to people who play it. And I've heard you relate so many times, just, you know, little instances that we've either talked about or come across, and you say, well, you know, that I go back to what I learned in the game of golf. What is it about the game that is so special?
Well, I've said it many times, but I truly believe that golf is probably the greatest common denominator that there ever was. And I say that for this reason. You can put a king, a plumber, a carpenter, and a corporation president together, and to bring them together under the umbrella of golf, they will all get together and have fun together. I don't know that you could do that in any other setting, but I have been blessed over the years to play with so many different people from so many different walks of life. And, you know, we don't really care about anything other than getting together on that first tee and playing a game of golf through 18 and just having fun together.
Yeah. And once you get over the initial, oh, I'm not as good as them, or I can't hit the ball, you know, you get to that third or fourth hole and what you recognize, it's just people out enjoying their company. And whether you hit the ball as well as you did the last time, or, you know, as well as you will the next time, almost doesn't matter. It's all about the relationships that are happening while you're playing the game.
That's very true. And I've said this too, you know, you can be around an individual, working with an individual for years. But if you take that individual, I've said it before, if I took an individual out on the golf course for 18 holes, I'll tell you what's in that man's soul. Because golf, like no other activity, will bear the soul. You know that person after 18 holes.
Certainly the pandemic was a big boon to the game, in that it was a, you know, it was a game that could be played while being socially distanced. But what would you say about the state of the game today?
Well, as sad as the COVID experience was, I think it probably did more for golf in rekindling the interest in the game of golf since the era when I first started back in the 50s and 60s. I see growth in the game of golf. Everybody that I talk to, owners, operators, and just general golfers, are more interested today in the game of golf than they have been in many years. And I say that with a little reservation, because COVID was not a good experience, but it sure did help the game of golf.
Yeah. We're talking with Gary Plato, a PGA member for more than 50 years. Gary, let's get back to the Lucius Bateman Foundation. You are in a very small group at this point of folks that have actually been taught by Lucius, and you very affectionately refer to yourselves as Bateman boys. You carry that mantle with a few others that are involved with your foundation. As a Bateman boy, and as you know, your foundation is trying to continue his legacy, what will you all do to kind of give this mantle to others coming up behind you?
Well, I think what we are hoping to do is to pass along the story of Lucius Bateman and let people of today know exactly just how big an impact this man had on so many people. It's just too bad that we didn't do this 30 or 40 years ago. I don't think you would have enough room on a single golf course or a multi-golf course facility to house all of the people that would want to come and play. At this stage of the game, a lot of us are getting a little long in the tooth, and we're not going to be around forever. But I think our job is to tell the story, to pass it along, and to let the younger generation come along and carry this mantle forward so that we can help as many kids as possible.
So tell us again about the golf tournament. Your initial golf tournament is coming up in September 18th. Tell us where it is and how people can get involved in it.
Well, the tournament's going to be held at the Alameda Chuck Carica Golf Complex. It's going to be, as you said, on September 18th. It'll be a 1 o'clock shotgun. We're limiting the field to 120 players so that people can get out there and get around in a timely fashion and enjoy the day. This is the inaugural. We plan on having this tournament every year, and I hope as time goes on, we get the second golf course fully opened at the Alameda Chuck Carica Golf Complex, that we will be able to use both golf courses and even expand the field even more. But you can get more information about this by going to LuciusBatemanFoundation.com. All of the information is listed there, and we'd love to have everyone come and be a part of it and celebrate the life of Lucius Bateman and in the process help kids.
You know, Gary, you are certainly one who tries to shine the light on others. But I appreciate what you're doing with the Bateman Foundation and with your goal to help others. But, you know, for the last couple of minutes here, let's focus a little bit about you. And, when you think back on this career that you've had, this successful career, if you had to explain yourself or describe yourself to others about what your career in golf has meant to you, how would you describe Gary Plato?
Well, I'd probably describe Gary Plato as one of the luckiest people that ever played the game of golf. I have been blessed from the very beginning with mentors that have shaped my life and have taught me what it is to contribute back to the game. And I look at people certainly like Lucius Bateman, people like, of course, the Tony Lima and John McMullen, the Lotz brothers. They have all had instrumental piece in my life, and really everybody that I've come across. I think I've learned more from them than they've learned from me, and I'm just happy that I'm able to participate and make the game of golf available to as many people as possible.
Gary Plato, the world is a better place having you in it. We appreciate all you've done, your career, what you're doing with the Lucius Bateman Foundation. LuciusBatemanFoundation.com for more information about the golf tournament or about helping out with the foundation and Gary's goal to help the youth of Northern California. Thanks so much for being with me today.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back into the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. Frank LaRosa with Scott Marsh and Tom Morton is joining us. Tom Morton, the PGA Director of Coaching and Instruction at Hagen Oaks Golf Complex and a regular contributor to this show. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. I sound like a broken record as I say over and over again. I always learn something when you come to the show, and I have a couple of specific golf tip questions that I want to get back to in a moment. But this is Open Championship Week, and you know we get used to the kind of golf we have here in Northern California with pretty much manicured fairways and the rough. We know where the rough is, and when you play over there, it's a whole lot of different kind of golf. What's the difference in the golf we're used to here in Northern California and what they'll play during this championship?
Yeah, I mean, on this topic, I think there's a couple interesting things to talk about. I think first and foremost, like course conditions. I think all too often people in this region think about, you know, course conditions being good if it's green and lush, so to speak, right? As we see when we watch television and see the courses that are played for the Open Championship, green is not a thing over there, right? More so brown and dry and firm and fast, and it plays great. So I think the average golfer should really, when they leave a golf course, think about, did that play well, right? Did it, you know, yes, did I have decent lies and whatnot, but did it play firm and fast? Did was my ball, you know, rolling? Was I getting my shots to sort of, you know, bound forward a bit rather than maybe check in the fairway or have mud on my ball and so on and so forth. So I think from that perspective, it's a great look at a different type of golf than certainly we are used to. And green doesn't always mean great. And then certainly there's playing the golf courses. And I think, Frank, is that kind of what you're alluding to and kind of a different style of play?
Absolutely, yeah.
So here, you know, what we call especially, you know, quote unquote, modern golf courses, you know, that's sort of why the, you know, sand wedge or lob wedge was even invented, right? And I think if I have it correctly, that club in relation to golf is a pretty new club for the bag. I think it was then in the 1960s is when the kind of higher lofted wedge was created. And it really was born out of a necessity from, you know, modern courses where there's all these, you know, how they build them, it doesn't bound forward and there's these, you know, maybe bigger mounds around the greens and you have to loft it up on the green. Well, this week we're going to see people putting from 30, 40, 50 yards off the green and hitting these little, you know, scooting bump and run shots from all over the place. And, you know, the rule of thumb over there is, and I think it's a great rule of thumb, to be honest, playing golf for most all amateurs, is if you can keep the ball on the ground, do it at every moment and every turn that you can. I think because of, you know, the invention of the lob wedge, golfers rely on it too much and they're using it way too much. I see that all the time with both my youth students, but also the adult students.
You know, when you mentioned a roll in the fairway, you know, the times that that I've been fortunate enough, and Scott, I know you've experienced this as well, when the ball just rolls forever, you know, our first thought is, boy, we're really hitting the ball well today, but that's not the case. And we're getting so much more bang for the buck, in effect, out of our drives that, you know, we are getting to the point where we can shoot, you know, hit with one or two less clubs than we would have in regular green and somewhat wet fairways.
Definitely. I mean, you're getting more yardage, more roll. Also, you have to plan a little bit better on where you're landing your shots into the greens, right? You know, thinking about, okay, I got 150 yards and I'm going to use my club that goes 150 because it'll stop right next to the hole. That obviously is not the case this week. And I think most, not all, but most, the better players prefer golf that, you know, you have to think about where you're landing it. And there's a little skip out, firm and fast conditions are, you know, a lot of fun. And I think I've seen a lot of talk about the 17th hole this week, how it's this little par three, maybe max like 135 yards or so. And it's pretty treacherous because there's this very small area on the green where you can land the ball. And I guess it's kind of like a, you know, reverse bowl where, you know, these hole locations are going to be more middle-ish in the green, but hit a little right, left, short, or long, it's going to roll off the green, and it's going to be pretty tough. And I think that's super fun to do that, not just be able to just point and click. You know, those players are so good that if the conditions get wet and you can stop the ball, that's when they go super, super low.
Right. You know, you mentioned your juniors that you're teaching a moment ago, and it seems every course I go to now, it doesn't matter, you know, where I might be playing, you always see a group of juniors out there. And it seems to me that Sacramento might be, you know, a bit of an outlier in terms of how much we pay attention to junior golf and how many instructors we have that focus on junior golf and how important the program is to us. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. Sacramento is an absolute hotbed for junior golf and kids working through the different courses and systems, you know, spinning out to be really good players. And I would argue the, you know, number of kids coming out of Sacramento playing any level of college golf, whether it be junior college up through Division I, is abnormal compared to most cities, especially one that, you know, Sacramento obviously isn't tiny, but it also isn't huge. And it's a pretty amazing number. And, you know, there, even lately, we've seen some come out, and there's a few that are now playing on the Canadian Tour. I know Riley Bell from Sac State is on the Canadian Tour. I know Chase Sinkowitz, who played at Arizona, is now on the Canadian Tour. One of my students, Zach Pola, just won the California State Amateur Championship. And I think the reason is just the, you know, it really starts, I would like to think, from way back when the golf pros that I've heard about really valuing junior golf and the importance of it. And then certainly my dad, Ken Sr., a big thing in 1983, he formed Say Golf to help save high school golf. And you look at these things over the course of time that turn into First Tee. You have, you know, First Tee, you know, certainly does a great job with the junior tour, makes it very affordable at age 12. They also run the U.S. Kids Tour, and they're doing it the right way. So kids are having more fun rather than it being something where they burn out too fast. Plus, there's a pile of great coaches in the Sacramento region that, you know, really do get kids to be inspired to play the game. So all along the way, there's huge support. And then even the Mort Golf Foundation, we give grants to help kids through their competitive time with golf to make sure that they have what they need. And because it can be expensive as you get a little older. And so Sacramento just really wraps their arms around these kids. And I truly believe that's why we're seeing so many of them you know, continue to play and turn out to be really good players.
The G-man, Gary Gerald, and I have been fortunate enough to play in the First Tee Fun Invitational, which is a junior-senior tournament where, you know, the seniors are paired with the junior anywhere from, I don't know, I guess about 10 years old, maybe up to 17 or 18. And in both years, we just kind of walk away shaking our heads how not only how efficient they are on the golf course, but what really, really good people these young boys and girls are. And that, again, is part of the whole program in terms of the junior golf, or the approach to junior golf here is you know, good golfers, good citizens. And it's really impressive. It's fun to watch. And I know, Scott, that you've seen some of these juniors as well and have remarked the same way.
Yeah, I've played with a lot of them and watched their ball go a lot farther than mine. So I've had personal experience with it. But, you know, Sacramento's always kind of thought of as a baseball town. And it's interesting, to your point, Tom, I think Sacramento's going to get that reputation as being a golf town as well as we move into the future.
Yeah, I sure would think so. I mean, you know, look at the University of Arizona. There was this last year, three kids that are playing on the team, and they're, you know, very, very good team in the country. Three of them were from Sacramento. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable when you think about that sort of thing. And I think what we're seeing, and this is, you know, as this grows and there's more kids playing, what we find is whether it's at a public course or at a country club, when you get these, you know, 4, 6, 8 kids that are all, you know, of similar age, but they kind of challenge one another. They play lots of golf together, and they really get pretty darn good by accident just because of that kind of pod that they're with. And that's really the way to do it. I think back in the early days with the Sutherland brothers, and there was a great group of players that were coming out at that time. And although I'm a little younger, I kind of was on the tail end and got to hang out with that group a bit. That's what it was. It was just hanging out at the back of the range, kind of, you know, quote unquote goofing around, but learning to hit shots and really organically becoming a much better player. And we're seeing these pods develop all over Sacramento. And we are even here at Hagen Oaks developing a program to sort of, you know, on purpose create that where adults and parents sort of get out of the way of the kids. We just formulate a time and a place where kids can come together to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing. Tom, I wanted to go back to, with the Open going on this week, a couple of things that stand out to me, too. You guys covered a lot of it, but I want to get your thoughts on the bunkers that you see overseas versus here, because obviously that's the major factor when people are hitting drives. They're just trying to stay away from those pot bunkers.
Yeah, part of it is what we talked about with the firm and fast conditions, and the design really, it pitches things more toward those deep bunkers. So, you know, you really do have to pay attention to the landing areas and what you're doing there, because those bunkers are so small yet deep. And I was listening yesterday, and Scottie Scheffler was talking about how you sort of, when you go in them, they don't sort of roll up to maybe, you know, a place where they can kind of hit up and out of it. They sort of go in and go maybe on the down clipper, a place where it's really hard to get out. And a little bit, he was lamenting the fact that he doesn't love that, but at the same time, that's what this golf is all about. So, I mean, what a cool look though, right? When they have all the different layers on the face and, if yeah, it's part of golf across the pond.
It feels like you need an elevator to get up and down in them. And you're right about Scheffler. He was upset because he was saying it was a downward slope as you get closer to the front side, which actually is a better shot, and it's kind of rewarding people who aren't hitting as good of shots. But the other thing, of course, is the wind over there, right? And trajectory of shots. I mean, here you can hit the ball as high as you want, and that's the whole point, to try and get it to land softly on the green. Over there, if you hit it high, you are in deep trouble.
Yeah, controlling trajectory obviously is such a key thing in golf, period, but over there it's even more, and how it can change from, you know, one nine to the next or one day to the next for sure. They're going to see all sorts of conditions from sun, wind, rain, and that all happens, you know, possibly within a round. So being, you know, as a really good golfer needs to be, the more adaptable you can be and to be able to control your golf ball is just of utmost importance.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm sorry, Frank, go ahead.
That's all right. I was just going to ask Tom if he has a pick to win.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think Rory's the favorite coming in after winning last week. I think kind of a quote-unquote dark horse could be Tommy Fleetwood. He's been playing really well, and he's really good at what we just were talking about. So, but I think this tournament, above all else, you kind of get some names that you've never heard of for a while, and, you know, it wouldn't shock me if kind of a player that we have heard of but maybe hasn't won before is in contention.
I hate the fact that that we have an hour to do the show and we're coming up on it. So I got about a minute left, and I promised that we'd get into a tip. Tom, all of us have faced the fact that, you know, you go out and shoot a great round and you think, I got it. I finally got it. I figured out the game. And then you go out and you just, you know, you're all over the place the next time. What is that? And how do we deal with that?
Yeah, well, I think a big part of it is people are always, you know, when they come for a lesson or they're talking to us, it's always about wanting a fix or wanting, you know, what's wrong, when the reverse should happen a lot, meaning that when we go have those great rounds and great days or that good range session, we should really be concentrating on, you know, what are we feeling and the things we're doing in that moment to create, you know, the good quality play. And then the next time we go back to it, to kind of get back focused to those things. And, you know, I even had 2 days after Zach won the state amateur, he came for a lesson and he's like, I just want us to review what I'm doing well right now, so we know the blueprint of it. So if things start going poorly, we can come back to it. And I think people should really look at that rather than always be looking for what's wrong. So,
you know, you get into a panic mode though, you know, it all starts going, you know, falling apart. And I don't know that, you know, even after all these years, that I'm real good at kind of figuring out, you know, well, I got to go back to the basics, because you get lost in the moment. So what would your tip be mentally to get back to the basics?
Yeah, I mean, usually when things go awry, it has to do with an alignment issue or even kind of a tempo timing thing. So, you know, I think I'd go back to basics and really check those two main things and make sure they're on track. And oftentimes, you know, maybe play the next shot or two feeling, hitting it at like 70% your normal tempo, and kind of get that, you know, balance, timing, tempo back on track.
All right, Scott, next time out, you watch my tempo and I'll watch your alignment. We'll see what happens.
I will definitely do that.
All right, Tom Morton, Director of Instruction at the Hagen Oaks Golf Complex, PGA member. Thanks so much for spending time with us. Appreciate it. It's the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. And we have wrapped up another week of golf talk here on the radio show. And appreciate you listening. Appreciate our guest today, Mr. Gary Plato, PGA, and Tom Morton, PGA. And we'll be back next week with more.